Halvo left some instructions here, continuing the Advent devotional from Andrea Polnasek, My Wish for Christmas, The Luke Project. So we'll read this final text here as we are concluding week 5, day 5, Finding Gratitude, Luke 2, 36 through 38, and then we'll hear from Andrea herself. The scripture says, there was also a prophetess Anna, the daughter of Penuel of the tribe of Asher. She was very old. She had lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple but worshiped night and day, fasting and praying. Coming up to them at that very moment, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem.
Isn't it fitting that the story concludes with a woman? We began with Elizabeth's journey towards motherhood in her old age and witnessed Mary's invitation to be the mother of God. And now our journey concludes with Anna, a prophetess who dedicated her widowhood to proclaim the coming king. Anna notices Simeon's speech. She sees the baby lifted up above the onlookers. She walks over with a sense of purpose. This is God in the flesh, the king she has waited for. She simply gives thanks and acknowledges that this baby is him, the Messiah. The Bible says that Anna is old, and with the conclusion of her story, it says she spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the fulfillment of the prophecy. She shared with anyone who would listen that the coming king had arrived. She spent the end of her days telling the story about her day in the temple when her wait ended and she saw the Messiah, Jesus. Today's questions are, what is gratitude? What are you grateful for? And how can you add a step of gratitude into your life's journey this year?
Well, the following was posted by James Lukowski, City of Pittsburgh paramedic, on Facebook, December 18th of 2012, but we wanted to share it with you.
James said this, an amazing thing happened today. When I trudged out of Medic 5 this morning around 7, I wasn't particularly exhausted and it wasn't particularly busy overnight.
As I was putting my things in my car, I heard someone call my name. When I turned, a man around 20 years old stared me in the face. The look he wore was one of uncertainty. He said my name again, and I asked how I could help him. Before I could answer, the man's arms were wrapped around me, and I was getting a huge, warm hug from a perfect stranger.
The man asked if I remembered him. When I said no, he replied that he didn't expect to have had an impact on me, but assured me that my partner and I had changed his life forever last December. I instantly began searching my brain for some tragic, life-threatening call with an excellent outcome from a year ago.
The man told me his name, gave me an envelope, and said thank you, and left.
I sat in my car and opened the envelope. On the top of the letter were bold uppercase letters which read, 100 moments you gave back to me. There was a brief introduction which explained why he sought us out.
The reason I couldn't remember his call was because the call was so nondescript. The young man explained in his letter how he had called 911 last year. The details was for a non-emergency run for a 20-year-old male who felt sick.
When we arrived at the man's apartment, at first there was no answer. When he opened the door, he immediately said he didn't need us anymore and that he was going to stay home. Paul and I offered to check him out and he reluctantly agreed. I remember he was soaked in sweat and seemed very on edge.
After checking his vital signs and speaking to the kids, something just seemed wrong. There was no critical indication of any life-threatening event that we could find, but the gut feeling was there. With a little prodding, he acquiesced and began and agreed to be transported for evaluation. We never did get him to verbalize a chief complaint or even allude to something that was bothering him. We talked a little about where he was from, his major in school, and the idle conversation on the way to the hospital. That night when I wrote the chart, that was the last time until that morning that I thought about the emergency call.
The letter further explained that the young man had been pushed to his limit with family, social, work, and school issues. He'd been battling depression for some time and had a family history of depression with multiple relatively close family members committing suicide over the past 25 years.
The day he called 911, he called not to be transported to the hospital, but instead so that we would come and find his body before his roommates came home. When he called the ambulance, he had a handgun. When he disconnected the call, he pulled the trigger.
The gun was jammed. Before he had a chance to recover from him having pulled the trigger and nothing happening, there was a knock at the door. In the letter, he explained that he had picked such a mundane complaint because he expected it to take the ambulance longer to get there. He opened the door to usher us away, but was too afraid to be forceful about it as he was afraid he'd attract attention. He had two other guns sitting on the kitchen table and was fully prepared to use them once we had left.
But it wasn't in the cards for him. Not for concern for the patient, but for it being so mundane and the middle of the night, we corralled the patient into the ambulance and were on the way to the hospital before he could get himself back into the house.
The four pieces of paper that came after the letter's introduction contained 100 things he did in the past year that he wouldn't have been able to do had we let him go back into that house. Here are some examples.
Number 12, got to say goodbye to my grandmother instead of her saying goodbye to me.
Number 24, woke up for the first day since childhood, not dreading what the day would hold.
Number 48, held my nephew the day he was born.
Number 62, had a Starbucks coffee. I know it doesn't seem important, he said, but the little things are life-size when you almost never get to do them again.
Number 100, I gave this letter to the people who changed my life forever.
I sat in my car for 20 minutes, stunned. Enclosed were pictures of him and his friends, him holding his nephews and family Thanksgiving dinner pictures.
I've preached to my students on both class and field settings, as well as my past partner, that it's not just the big whistles which make a difference. Holding a terrified Alzheimer's patient's hand on the way to the hospital can make more of a difference than intubating that cardiac arrest. I never thought that there was a chance that a call I considered to be essentially of no consequence could have made such an impact on a young man's life.
Humbled, I share this with Facebook not to showcase mine and Paula's actions. It should be a reminder to my fellow EMS providers that while we are in a thankless job, we all need to realize that we make a difference every single day. We leave some footprint in someone's life on each and every ambulance call we respond to, no matter how trivial it seems to us.
I also want to remind my colleagues, including paramedics, physicians, nurses, counselors, and anyone who has contact with any other person ever, things are not always what they seem.
And he finishes this way. Without knowing it, a kind word or a little observation can rewrite history. Just getting back yesterday after some time off for the holidays, I was able to spend time with my family, with Lindsay's side of the family. It was really great, but not everyone is able to get home for Christmas, home for the holidays, especially if they have to work. There are some jobs where folks, you just can't get off.
And
Here's what happened when Pierce Vaughn's father decided, you know what, I'm not going to let the fact that my darling daughter has to work keep me from having Christmas with her. So Pierce is a Delta flight attendant. She was on the schedule for both Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. I'm guessing that's not one of the most popular shifts.
Guessing not.
Maybe she was low woman on the totem pole. I don't know. But she had to work both Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, meaning it would be the first ever Christmas that she would have to spend without her family, as again, she took care of the passengers in the air. But her dad, Hal, was determined that she have some company. So the man from Ohio took advantage of a Delta rule that lets immediate family of flight attendants fly for free on standby as long as there's an available seat. He hopped then on a handful of flights that his daughter was working on both Monday and Tuesday, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. The devoted dad booked 6 flights in total just so he could
spend Christmas at
40,000 feet with his daughter.
I absolutely love that. I want to know at some point, though, if she was like, Dad, get your own soda. I'm busy.
Right. He just starts clinking the glass around the ice
excuse
in the glass.
Me, excuse me. No.
Excuse me.
That is amazing. And
what a devoted dad. That's wonderful.
That's what dads do, though, right?
Love it.
Us parents.
Exactly.
We always want to be with our kids.
Well, if you're not sure what to do with all those candy canes that are laying around the house post-Christmas, and then maybe if you went to the big box store and it's like, oh, 50% off, I guess I need more candy canes.
Give me the 90%
See,
off ones.
See, I'm holding out for like 75 to 90% off, just like you. And then it's like, I'll get a few for stirring the cocoa.
We're going to go down a rabbit hole here, a little bunny trail. Because I went to the Mall of America with my children yesterday.
Yeah.
The sales. Oh, the sales. Caleb, I bought lotion for 47 cents.
Seriously, when I was off on Wednesday, I stopped by the Big Blue Box.
Yeah.
And it was like, there are almost as many people here there were like on the weekend before Christmas, which also was a total mistake to walk in. It's like, I needed a dog leash. Why did I go in here? But it's like,
it's the sales.
It's the clearance.
Oh,
it's stuff we don't need after we already got
but
way too much.
But it's stuff that I did need.
Exactly.
And that's the thing.
Exactly.
Like,
that's
like
the difference between smart shopping and just sales shopping.
Yeah.
However, I don't judge. Anyways. You got lots of candy canes. That's great because here's a use for them. Consider using the season's most famous candy to treat an upset stomach or fend off germs.
Yes.
Why, huh? Studies suggest that peppermint, the primary flavoring in candy canes, of course, boosts a plethora of health benefits, with some doctors suggesting the use of peppermint oil as the first line of defense against IBS.
You know, it's interesting because I remember that even as a small child, my mom always used to, you know, be like, oh, here, suck on a peppermint.
I've also heard that peppermint oil tea, or like extract is like good for warding off spiders. So I'm not sure if you can just like wheel the candy cane and be like, back, you eight-legged devils, back. Do with that information what you will.
You try that, and I'm going to record it, because that's amazing.
That's all I have. Hey, this is Caleb from the WIB Wake Up Show. Thanks so much for taking a listen to this. You can catch the show live weekday mornings 5:30 to 9 a.m. on 103.7 FM out of Eau Claire, 94.3 FM in Wausau, 93.5 in Marshfield, 93.7 FM in La Crosse, and anywhere at WWIB.com or via the TuneIn radio app or your Amazon Alexa and Google Home devices.